learn about the Farm Bill, both this iteration of the Farm Bill and the expectations or the hopes for the next one, so that we all will have an opportunity to weigh in when the next one starts to come around, because I expect we'll all have our different opinions on that, but that's good. And I expect our speakers today will all have different opinions, and that, too, is good. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to start with William Hunt, who is a Minnesota State Conservationist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, I believe. So if you could introduce yourself for the record, tell us what you're going to do, and we're glad to have you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the members of the committee. My name is William Hunt. I'm the State Conservationist with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, a USDA agency. My responsibility is statewide, and I have with me my Assistant State Conservationist, Tim Kohler, and Tim handles most of my Farm Bill programs in the state. With that, I think we'll, if it's okay with you, Madam Chair, we'll move forward with the presentation. I know we have some time limits.
Well, we 45 minutes or less, and members, if you have questions as we go along, let's take those questions as we go along. I think that helps us all learn better.
The presentation that we're giving, it's in your packet. And starts with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, a part of USDA. NRCS is an old line agency. It started back in 1933 as a soil erosion service, and it was converted in the Department of the Interior, and it was converted later in 1935 to the Soil Conservation Service, and was reorganized in 1994 to the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We are the primary federal agency that works with private landowners to help them protect their natural resources. We focus on private lands. NRCS is an agency, and our people, all of our assistance is voluntary. It's science-based. It's in conjunction with the university and other professional officials. We review all of our technical standards, specifications, to make certain that they meet the science-based test. We're also an incentive-based conservation technical and financial assistance agency, and we are concentrated on making certain that our assistance is to soil and water conservation districts, which are locally led. The landowners obviously control all of the land that we work with in terms of private land, and they are involved at all phases of the planning and implementation process. All the decisions are made by the landowners on their private land. It's made at the lowest possible level. It's made in conjunction with the Soil and Water Conservation District, with NRCS providing assistance. This model has operated very well for over 72 years now. In the state of Minnesota, I have under my direction 354 full-time employees. We service every county in the state. We operate on a soil and water conservation district boundary as opposed to counties, but in most cases they are coterminous. We work hand in glove with the Farm Service Agency, the Rural Development Agency, and as I mentioned, soil and water districts. We have 91 local soil and water districts in the state, and their mission is to provide one-on-one assistance for landowners. I think next we'll have a map, organization map of Minnesota that gives you an idea of the breadth and scope of our assistance. Yes, that's not
In this folder on this side is a pre-slide handout of the exact same thing you're seeing. So one of the people were wondering where it was.
Okay, thank you, Tim. But you'll notice the dots on this map. We have NRCS in the state. I have 83 soil and water district offices in the state. As you well know, it's 87 counties. We have 91 soil and water conservation districts. But we service every county in the state through this array of field offices statewide. In addition, I have seven areas, and you'll notice the red coloring on the map. Those area offices provide technical assistance. We have trained engineers, biologists, soil conservationists, and other people who also provide that same type of administrative assistance that I try to provide statewide at the local level. In addition, I have eight RC&D, Resource Conservation and Development Project Offices that cover 64 counties in the state as well. So you can see that's quite a breadth and scope of NRCS and USDA assistance statewide in the state of Minnesota. How do we provide our assistance? We mentioned in cooperation with the district, but I also need to mention in support and in cooperation with tribes, with the State Conservation Agency, Bowser, Pheasants Forever, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, Ducks Unlimited, the Nature Conservancy, and others. The assistance that we provide is both technical and financial assistance. In addition, we provide what we call an incentive type assistance. It's also technical assistance. But under the financial assistance, you'll see that we provide cost-sharing incentive payments, easement payments. My budget on an annual basis this past year was $33 million of that technical assistance to maintain those offices and that technical assistance out in the field. All of our office supervisors are college-trained people that have degrees in agronomy, in soils, or some type of technical field, generally from a land-grant college or university, most of them from the University of Minnesota. Those employees support the $33 million provides the salaries and expenses of my employees. Our offices support technical service providers. I believe it's the most expensive conservation delivery system of trained specialists in the state to provide assistance through local soil and water districts to private landowners and local SWCDs, soil and water conservation districts. This past year, I had over $50 million in financial assistance that we invested on conservation and conservation practices in the state. That's 50 plus the 33. The program that I administer in the state through this array of employees, and by the way, I have the best group of employees in the state. And if you don't believe it, you can ask me after this meeting is over. We provide conservation technical assistance and soil surveys. This conservation technical assistance program is our bread and butter program for everything that we do. We had that long before we had the Farm Bill, and I suspect we'll have it long after the Farm Bill is over. We also conduct soil surveys through the National Cooperative Soil Survey Program, and that's a very technically oriented program that has some very exacting standards. And we'll get into that just a little bit later. The other programs that operate in the state is the PL-566 Small Watersheds Program, the Watershed Operations Program. The 06 program is the planning part of it. The 08 is the operations part of the program. You may be familiar with the Snake River Watershed. That's the most recent watershed that we have constructed in the state. In addition, I have a watershed rehabilitation program, and that's to make sure that some of these old dams and old structures that were built perhaps 40 or 50 years ago are still functioning as they were designed to, and to make certain that they're not in a state of disrepair, that they will create a public hazard. I mentioned the Resource Conservation and Development Program. I have eight of those that cover 64 counties in the state. Now we're down to the Farm Bill programs. What I've discussed so far, the program that we receive an appropriation from Congress on an annual basis, and they're called the discretionary program. Now we're down to the mandatory programs, the Farm Bill programs. One program we have is the Conservation Security Program. A second is the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and that is also broken up into the Ground and Surface Water Program as well. We have the Farm and Ranch Lands Protection Program, excuse me, the Grassland Reserve Program, the Wetlands Reserve Program, the Wildlife Habitat Incentives Program. Folks, we got lots of programs, lots of Farm Bill programs that we administer here in the state. Let's talk about the conservation operations of the Conservation Technical Assistance Program. That one program in 06, I received almost $14 million. And we use that program to do conservation planning assistance with individual landowners. And we also provide direct support to local soil and water districts. The soil survey program we have, last year we had over 1.7 million acres of soils mapped initially or updated. We're one of the leaders in the nation, and in terms, also we had 72 counties that were certified digital, Sergo certified digital data. Receive about $3.2 million for that program. The Farm Bill programs have been good to us here in Minnesota. It's brought a tremendous amount of financial and technical assistance to the state. We are the third largest state in the nation in terms of Farm Bill programs. Only Texas and California exceed Minnesota in terms of the assistance we receive from the Farm Bill. And it's because of the workload that we have. We cooperate with, as I mentioned, federal, state, and local agencies and groups. We work very closely with our, with our sister agency, FSA, on their Conservation Reserve Program and their Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. We are a technical assistance agency. We are not a regulatory agency. FSA provides the program management and handling of the funds for the Conservation Reserve and CREP program. All of our Farm Bill programs are open to everyone who is eligible. Generally, there is some type of a previous farming history requirement to participate in Farm Bill, and the one exception being the Wildlife Habitat Incentives Program. It's a locally led process, and thank goodness that I'm blessed with a lot of local soil and water district folks who lead the local work groups. They provide us advice and recommendations on what are the conservation needs and what are the conservation practices that are needed to address those needs in their local area. The local soil and water conservation district chairs the local work group, the group that makes recommendations to my local district conservationists and ultimately to me. I'm also blessed with a great state technical committee that's very active in helping us implement the Farm Bill programs in the state. And that's one of the reasons we have been so successful in continuing to acquire Farm Bill programs. Let's talk about EQIP. And by the way, if at any time you have a question, please stop. The Environmental Quality Incentives Program, we refer to it as our flagship program. It's a fix-it-up program. If you've got problems, you have needs, this is one of the key programs we can use to help you address those problems and needs. We provide technical and financial assistance as well as incentive payments to producers to help them address their problems. I mentioned we had, I'm going to mention later that we got about $25 million, and we get that annually in the EQIP program, that we address conservation needs in this state on a locally led basis. It's totally voluntary. We have no regulatory programs. In addition, the local producers match almost dollar for dollar the $25 million that I invest, we invest, through the EQIP process in the local work group. So you can see that we're getting over $50 million worth of conservation here in the state on an annual basis, on a voluntary basis from producers. There are tremendous needs. The requirements of the EQIP program is that we have to address one of the resource problems of soil, water, air, or wildlife habitat. This past year, we had over 1,400 individual producer contracts for over $25 million. The average allocation, cost share allocation, per soil and water district in this state was over $275,000. Out of the total allocation, we had 33 limited resource producers who were allocated over $1.3 million. In addition, we allocated, and again, this is with the support and concurrence of the State Technical Committee, we allocated $480,000 to American Indian initiatives in the state. And what's not shown here is that we also had an agreement to allocate up to $75,000 of my $26 million to address the new immigrant farmer needs here in the local area. The next is a chart. I hope you have that in your packet as well, that shows the amount of EQIP funding. Up until this year, we have invested over $95 million in EQIP cost sharing with producers. And again, just multiply that by two, and you basically have the total impact, conservation impact of the EQIP program alone in the state. 2007, we are going to receive more EQIP money. So that allocation has gone up. It's up to roughly $26 million this year. Another program that we also administer is the Conservation Security Program. Now, this program is a new program that was rolled out in 2004. The original intent is that 1/8 of the nation would be able to participate in this program on an annual basis. The problem so far has been the lack of funding, L-A-C-K, of funding. It provides payments to producers for doing and maintaining good stewardship. It's not a fix-it-up program. If you've got a problem, this is not the program for you. This is for the people that have already been doing a great job over the years, and now we're paying them to continue to produce those public water quality, wildlife habitat, and other benefits on their land. This is sort of the old green ticket idea that the Soil and Water District folks came up with years ago. We started out with the Blue Earth Watershed in 2004, and that was a joint watershed between Iowa and Minnesota. In 2005, if you just think red, we had Red Lake, Red Eye, Redwood, Root, and Salt River watersheds as a continuation of new watersheds, and it was a we continued the Blue Earth Watershed. In 2006, we added the Red Lakes Watershed. So when you add all of those together, excuse me, we had over 712 contracts with individual producers to continue to be good stewards of the land. We paid out an average of over $8,800 to continue to do what you've already been doing, and that is to produce good clean water, good wildlife, and erosion control on your land. The next chart also shows you the Conservation Security Program funding. Now, and after that, you've got a map of the state that shows the CSP watersheds, where they're located. One of the concerns in 06 and later, and that's been expressed by my staff, and which I totally agree with, is our limitations on our ability to continue to provide technical assistance to those CSP watersheds, because we still have to review with the landowner and the eligibility requirement on an annual basis. We have to review the performance, and generally they want to modify their contracts to include what's called enhancement payments. That's where the money, where real money is in the Conservation Security Program. Next is the Wetlands Reserve Program. It provides technical and financial assistance to restore previously drained and associated uplands. We generally have a minimum of 4-to-1 ratio of uplands to wetland areas, so that we in fact have maintained the quality of water that we expect for our wildlife and wetland functions and values. To date, we had a celebration last year of the 60,000 acre, and I think several of you were here at that celebration, and we were celebrating over 60,000 acres of WRP easements accomplished in the state of Minnesota. That was down south at Owatonna, just south of Owatonna. We obligated over $17 million. Now, these are additive. I'm not repeating what we've already included in previous programs. We had an additional $17 million that was obligated with 43 million landowners on over 15,000 acres in 2006. And we recorded 28 easements on 5,000 acres, and I'm sure you won't remember all these numbers, but you have this in your packet, all right? Landowners completed 3,100 acres of upland restoration and 1,300 acres of wetland restoration, and over $1.4 million was spent on these restoration activities. Getting choked, so Tim, I'm going to ask for a relief pitcher, and if Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, I'll have my assistant to cover one or two of these items.
Thank you, Bill. As a part of the WRP program,
excuse me, if you put your name in for the record.
Yes, my name is Tim Kohler, an assistant state conservationist with NRCS here in Minnesota. The Habitat Corridors Partnership that many of you are aware of with LCMR, as recommended by LCMR and then now LCCMR, we've been a founding member of that effort and have gone ahead and leveraged over $40 million of WRP money. In addition to the $1.1 million that the LCMR has recommended. In addition, we've been cooperating with the state quite extensively with a RIM WRP partnership, where we try to take a 30-year easement with federal programs and pull up a perpetual easement in many cases with RIM dollars on too. The chart, the next chart you see is just once again just graphically displaying the large sum of money that that has been put forward in regards to the WRP program here in Minnesota.
I'd like to interject at this. I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's see. Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kohler, Mr. Hunt, on that RIM and WRP easement, I've heard from the field that the new appraisal process for WRP has kind of slowed the sign-up, and maybe if you could just elaborate what the state, some of the bonding money that went for CREP last time is being used with WRP to get more, the higher sign-up for WRP.
Yeah, Representative Hansen and members, the idea here is that nationwide we have been mandated to use a new appraisal process which values agricultural land and highest and best uses as well as before and after value of easement land. And that process is fairly convoluted and fairly interesting, to say the least, and has caused a reduction in the potential reduction in the amount of money that a landowner would receive for an easement payment. So we've been able to utilize a RIM funding through Bowser that the legislature as well as their board authorized them to do, to kind of put the two together to give a landowner a fairer share or fairer payment for that easement to ensure that we can get the easements that landowners are offering us. And I would offer that it's in prioritized focused areas. We're not just blanketing easements across the state to try to take agricultural land out of production. That's not where we're going. We're focused into habitat corridor partnership areas, priority duck areas from background with the DNR and Ducks Unlimited and others. And so we're really trying to focus our effort into areas that we can get the biggest bang for the buck and leave the productive farmland in most of the rest of the state, you know, to produce crops, food and fiber, et cetera. But it's been a really good partnership, and we hope to continue that effort into the future, because nationally we've heard that our appraisal process is not going to revert to the old system, if you will. Thank you.
Help us out. When you are purchasing an easement, what percentage of the value are you paying for the easement? What ranges would those fall in?
Madam Chair and members, value as compared to like fee title, for instance, the total value of the land?
Yes.
It's hard to say because it varies so much across the state, but what our appraisal process does is we look at the highest and best use of the land prior. So like if it's agricultural land, say it's valued at $2,000 an acre, okay? Then the process will try to value what that area would be at what value after the easement is put into it, which basically would allow the producer to quietly enjoy it and pay taxes on it effectively, which generally that difference is quite substantially different. I would have to say probably overall we're probably looking at 75% maybe of the rough value of a fee title, but it's real dangerous for me to give you an average number because I don't think there is really an average, but the landowner still maintains ownership, still maintains control of access, still maintains, you know, again, the quiet enjoyment, the ability to, you know, to do limited work on the easement too, so it's a... Go ahead.
Help me out here. You're paying 75% of the value, but if I heard you correctly, you were valuing it as farmland with the assumption that the farm value is higher than the value for hunting and fishing. Am I hearing you correctly on that?
Well, let me, Madam Chair and members, let me maybe kind of correct myself a little bit. It's the highest in use, highest and best use. So there's sites out there that hunting might be a higher use than agriculture, value-wise. I mean, you know, how much people are paying for property, or maybe houses are the highest and best use. And I'm not saying best use, but I believe in houses are better than agricultural land. But, you know, from a appraisal standpoint. It's that highest and best use in a precondition minus the value in the after condition. And that's probably been our largest challenge, and as Representative Hansen brought up, is that in some places the after value has increased in so much value because of the value of hunting and fishing land, that's where that difference hasn't given us enough leverage to offer a farmer enough money to enter into an easement program. So that's the beauty of tying the state and the federal program together a little bit.
If I could, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I
from a management standpoint, Madam Chair and members of the committee, it averages, we pay about $1,000 per acre. That's what it averages out across the state. And there's some that's lower, and we've had some up in the northwestern part of the state. I think we've paid $300-$500 for that easement. But then when we get down in the more valuable parts of the state, the highest valued land in the southern part of the state, and that could go as high as $2,000. So, but on average, it's $1,000. Now, if I may add, this creates a unique opportunity for us in Minnesota, because we have a partnership here with the state that others don't have. And because of this new, what they call yellow book appraisal process, it's not working for some of those folks down south. See, this is a national program, the WRP program, so we're competing with everybody else for dollars. Their problem becomes my opportunity and our opportunity here in the state. If I can demonstrate to our leadership that we can leverage the WRP dollars that we're getting in this state, I can get more of the dollars that Louisiana and other places are scheduled to get. So the partnership we have, and that's very consistent with the administration's priority on leveraging in terms of market-based conservation, and we'll get into that a little later, but that's exactly where the current administration wants to focus our efforts, is turn more of it back to local people, get more local involvement, get more leveraging of state, local, and federal dollars. So a problem for them becomes an opportunity for us here in Minnesota, thanks to you.
Okay. Then if I could follow up on that. So you are paying $1,000 an acre, and if are you, when you talk about leveraging, then you're looking for state funds in addition, so somebody is actually getting maybe $1,500 an acre, Mr. Hunt?
That's a good example. Typically, the regular appraisal process, not the federal appraisal process, typically might have the land valued higher than what we would pay the federal government through our yellow book appraisal process. And if we appraised it at, and we said we could only pay you $1,000, but really the open market appraisal here in Minnesota would say that's worth $1,500. If a private source or the state could come in with some additional funds through REM or some other source, then that then would be a complete offer to that landowner and probably would make the decision as to whether or not they accepted the land into WRP. That's the leverage that we're referring to. Now, the $1,000 from the federal government, the residual appraisal value of $500, if you add those two together, $500. And so for $500 from, for example, REM, $1,000 from the federal government, now we've got a WRP site that's high priority for the state.
And if I could follow up on that, so the 75% value of the easement or is the 1,000 plus the 500, and that comes up to 75%, or is it just your part that is 75%?
Well, let me, and again, I wish I hadn't thrown out 75% because it's
I wish you hadn't either.
Yeah, it's just a number. But let me clarify, Madam Chair and representatives. Let me clarify two points. One is when we take a 30-year easement, we only pay a different 75%, but we only can pay 75% of our appraised value. Okay, period, because it's a 30-year easement. The state then uses their system of the RIM rates and different processes that they have to then match us with their portion. How much that equates to the fee title is just so variable that, you know, I shouldn't have said this, the other 75%, but I can't think of any cases where we've actually paid more than fee title for an easement. But it could occur at some point. But the bottom line is with the value of farmland and the value of commodities and the value of putting that habitat on the ground, we use our separate processes, but come up with a fair price for the landowner, basically.
In addition, we provide, we pay for all of the restoration costs on these permanent easements. As Tim says, 75% on these 30-year easements, but most of our easements are permanent easements. We don't have very many 30-year easements. So it's, if you look at it, the before and after appraisal system that everybody uses all over the country, but we have to use a federal system. And again, it's before the easement, then after the easement, what we're trying to pay is that difference. In other words, those restrictions on your property as a result of having an easement on it for WRP.
Representative Moe has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On a different direction, I first hear testimony here on what we're paying for easements is very interesting to me. Representative Ann Zels and I are from the north, and we wondered if you had a acronym assistance program at the USDA for some of us. That's the first question, just a joke. But the real question I have is, we're challenged with trying to comply with the Federal Clean Water Act. We passed a step in that direction last year. Obviously, we're going to need significant resources to get there. Again, we're trying to comply with the federal program, and I wondered if in the new farm bill, how coordinated is that going to be with states like Minnesota's efforts to try to actually accomplish this legitimately and be in compliance and clean up our water?
That's a good question, and I think the answer is going to rest with you and folks like you, that the 2007 Farm Bill is going to be written very soon. We happen to have a very important action in that 2007 Farm Bill, and Congressman Colin Peterson, who is the chair of the House Ag Committee. And so as federal employees, I can't lobby you or I can't tell you how I think it ought to go, but I can tell you that you have the right and responsibility, as we all do as private citizens, to let your elected representatives know what you want in that farm bill and how you want those federal programs to operate.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hunt, thank you. Okay, so as a consultant to us, if we were asking for your recommendations when we talk to Colin Peterson, what might you suggest that we ask?
I kind of feel like the witness that says I refuse to answer that on the grounds it might incriminate me, but I'm not going to use that. I would suggest that there are areas such as the Conservation Security Program that could really help with a lot of these non-point source problems. And my 41 years of working with the government and in conservation tells me that where you can provide voluntary incentive-based approaches to solving problems, that's the best way to do it. To go in with a lot of regulations and to try to force people to do things, it just hasn't worked. It's never worked. And I would say that things like the Conservation Security Program that are adequately funded, where we could get all of these watersheds fully participating on an 8-year basis, where you reward good stewardship, you encourage people to put good conservation on the land, I think that's an excellent way to go. I don't want any regulatory programs in NRCS. I've been with them for 41 years. And we've worked very successfully. We have a very good reputation with the landowners and with the other agencies that we work with. So I would stress, if I were in a position to offer that advice, more of the voluntary approach using existing conservation programs that are framed properly that need to be adequately funded.
Representative Moe.
And then one last question. Could you give us some indication of what adequately funded might be?
I think originally the authorization was something in the order of $2-3 billion. And I know that sounds like a large number, but what is the value of our soil and water resources and our clean air and our wildlife habitat? I think it's much more than that. And I won't get into how much money we're spending in Iraq or someplace else, but my point being that we've got to invest in our resources and in our future of our country, and I think that's the best type of investment we can make. I would venture, and I'll probably hear this, but $3 billion as a floor.
And, Madam Chair, as compared to what that program is funded at now?
It's $254 million, and it's dying. It's a good program that's dying from the lack of funding.
And all of the, Madam Chair, and all of that money is currently being spent early on in the year?
It's being spent on existing contracts. We can't expand, and in fact, a lot of people who are eligible for the Conservation Security Program are getting in the program, but there's no money because you don't fit in a high enough category in order to receive funding. I mean, we're almost to the point that you got to have a Tier 3 contract in order to get any funding out of CSP. So, again, it's a great program. It's a great concept. It would work if it were adequately funded. Tim?
Representative Moe, Madam Chair, in your packet, and again, we're not going to be able to hit all these slides, but there is a two or three pages beyond is a little discussion on unfunded backlog.
Right.
With WRP, for example, Wetlands Reserve Program, we have almost $60 million of farmer applications that we have not been able to fund just sitting right now. And if we really went out and tried to get people to voluntarily want easements on their land to protect priority habitat, it would be probably a couple $100 million of applications we could receive pretty easily. In the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, the Fixer-Up Program, as Bill said, last year in just 2 months' time, we got $35 million worth of applications. And like Bill said, remember, that was a voluntary effort that the landowner said they wanted to spend $35 million of their own money to do stuff too. We could probably easily get a couple $100 million worth of applications from landowners wanting to do conservation work. And then the third one, as Bill mentioned, is, and just to show you the magnitude, you know, we funded 14 people in Conservation Security Program this past year, 06, and there's 8,000 people potentially eligible in the state. So you could do the math on that pretty fast to know the, again, we're never going to have enough money to do everything, but we could sure do more with some priority-focused money. And I would add, the last thing I would add that's in your packet, too, is that, it's a lack of technical assistance. One of the things that this administration has done is they, working with Congress and the Senate, have done a great job in getting funds out, but they've done a pretty tight job on keeping federal staff at a certain level. But what they have done is they've given us the authority to enter into an agreement with private and public entities to share on the technical responsibilities of implementing Farm Bill programs. And so that's another thing that that if we could continue that in the Farm Bill, if I was ever asked for my opinion, that would be great, because it lets the state and it lets partners like DU and others put money in and say, well, we're willing to pay for half of the cost to implement something, not the implementation, but the technical stuff to survey and design and lay it out, if you'll pay for half of it, because we think that's a valuable project for water quality, for wildlife habitat, for air quality, whatever it might be. So that's another really important thing, is that we've gotten tons of money, not enough, as you saw from the backlog, but we're really short on the technical part of it. It's taking us 2 or 3 or 4 years to get stuff implemented because we just don't have enough staff. So many partners like the state have come forward and helped us, you know, implement some stuff. So,
Madam Chair, if I may... I'm sorry.
Go ahead, and we have two more questions, and then we're going to wrap up.
And to wrap up what Tim was just saying, we get two pots of money, financial assistance and technical assistance. We can't mix them. If it's financial assistance money, I can't use it for people, and I can't use it for things and so forth. And that is really the constraint on our ability to expand our program. Tim mentioned this tremendous backlog of requests. If I got it, what would I do with it? I don't have the people, and I don't have the resources to, and I don't have the horses to deliver. And that's where we need to continue to expand our partnership with local soil and water districts, with the state conservation agencies, some of these other pheasants forever and others who have technical approval authority and can help us get these practices on the ground. I've got a backlog right now from previous years of over $20 million in EQIP that we still haven't got on the ground. That's going to hurt Minnesota in the future, because in the future funding formulas, if you don't have all these practices installed, in other words, I got it in contracts, it's obligated, but it's not on the ground. In the future, the formula that the national headquarters is using, if I don't get more of those practices installed on the ground, it's going to reduce our current year's technical and financial assistance in EQIP. And we don't want to lose that positioning. I just thought I wanted to make that point. Thank you.
We have two more questions. Representative Baxter and then Representative Gunther.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this really short. I'd like to ask him about 20 questions, but I know we don't have 4 hours. Director Hunter, Mr. Kohler, I just want to tell you, as someone who's been a participant in the program, it's a terrific program. I will just tell you, extremely impressed in all my business years, the folks that are working for you, specifically out in Representative Peterson's district, Carisha Letty, I believe is how you pronounce your last name, is an unbelievable young lady that is just a terrific public employee. My concern is that we be cognizant of the long-term maintenance of this. This is a huge responsibility for a landowner that we've now taken all their income potential out of the way and restored it to prairie, and someone's got to take care of it long-term. So I hope you keep Carisha around to keep an eye on all those properties. I think in that respect, I was really impressed, Director, to hear you talk about partnering with all the different organizations. I know specifically we worked with a DU employee borrowed your organization. However, he was a DU employee driving a white pickup. Just impressive. Continue to do that. I hope that we're flexible in the program as we move forward, and I hope Congressman Peterson will take that, and we work with all the different interest groups as we manage it. My other concern is if we're cognizant with the local officials as you were in the tax loss, there's going to be tax loss as we take this property out of production, and we need to work with the local township folks who it's hard for them to take, whether we're buying it for WMAs or turning it into WRP land. And I just want to just weigh that in, and I don't want to take up more of the chair's time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hunter.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Director Hunt, I was wondering if you were in charge of the program that was reinstated. I think it was originally a President Clinton law that all new tile that were crushed or broken or had to be maintained had to be reinspected. Is it your personnel that have to inspect those tiling situations?
Well, we have a responsibility under the swamp buster provisions of the Farm Bill, and we don't have to go out and recertify, but we do provide technical assistance on wetland delineations, wetland determinations, and to help a producer determine what is maintenance and what is new drainage. And anything that was drained prior to December 23, 1985, as stated in the law, the producer can maintain that degree of drainage. And anything beyond that, normally if it's not maintenance, if you're going to affect wetlands, it's recommended that those producers fill out what we call a 1026 to the Farm Services Agency and request our assistance, which we will give at no cost.
To follow up, I agree with you. You don't have enough personnel because if they can't be inspected when there are traps in the ground, when the ground is frozen, and you have a lot of tiling in your area to increase the yields of the crop, and you have one inspector who's 40, 50 miles away, the person that's in your area is not trained for that, that the small window means that they have to wait about 5 or 6 or 7 or even 8 years before they can have their situation inspected. And it really is causing a lot of hardship. So I know Congressman Peterson was very aware of this. He had meetings all over. I was just hoping that you could cast a little positive note on that situation that a lot of people are suffering from.
Thank you.
Mr. Hunt, one final question for me. You mentioned Swamp Buster. We had a hearing. Our last hearing was on wetlands. And one of the testifiers mentioned that information about your determinations under Swamp Buster are not public information. Is that under statute, or is that a practice of yours?
It's under statute that we have to protect the right to privacy of individuals. You can request the information under the Freedom of Information. The information can be requested from me, but I have to go through a review with my trained FOIA, Freedom of Information staff to determine whether or not we can release that information. But I can't release information on your property to anyone else or their property to yours without going through that process, and it may be that I can't release it by law, federal law.
All right. Thank you. I have no other questions. I know we could spend a lot more time on this, but we have lots of other folks who want to help us learn this. So I think we need to move on, but thank you very much for coming and helping out here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have Perry Asmus, State Executive Director of the Farm Service Agency. And I think you're bringing somebody with you. Yes. And we'll be introducing him.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Perry Asmus. I'm the State Director for the USDA Farm Service Agency in Minnesota. With me today is Greg Anderson, who's the conservation specialist with Minnesota FSA. And we appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to talk a little bit about programs that FSA administers. We're going to focus mostly on the conservation programs today, CRP, CREP, and that sort of thing. But we do appreciate the opportunity to provide the information. Just real briefly about who we are with the Farm Service Agency. Like NRCS, we do have a strong presence out in rural Minnesota. We have 79 offices around the state. Virtually every county in Minnesota has an FSA office. And we're the ones responsible for administering various farm programs passed by Congress. We have over 400 employees in those offices. Our headquarters is here in St. Paul along with NRCS. And again, while we're going to focus on conservation today, we do administer farm commodity support programs. We administer a number of credit programs for beginning farmers and for emergency loans, that sort of thing. Anytime Congress passes a disaster bill in which counties or all of Minnesota are eligible for, we're typically responsible for administering those disaster programs. And then finally, the conservation programs, specifically a conservation reserve program. I think you're all aware that we're in the last year of the Farm Bill. The Congress passed the Farm Bill back in 2002. It's a five-year Farm Bill that is set to expire at the end of this fiscal year, federal fiscal year, which is end of September. And so, obviously, we're looking forward with anticipation, seeing what Congress does, what changes they make. There's certainly a lot of interest in the next Farm Bill from a lot of organizations, a lot of groups. Our job will be then to administer whatever programs that are passed, particularly as it relates to the programs I mentioned earlier. So we're going to be watching, and USDA will be providing some recommendations down the road, I think, to Congress. And certainly I think Minnesota is in a good position in terms of our congressional delegation. Four of our 10 members are on the Ag Committee, both of our senators, two of our congressmen, and, of course, Congressman Peterson is the chair of the House Ag Committee. So our role is to be a reference, a resource, and then be prepared to implement those programs once they are passed. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about our conservation programs. I think in your packet there's a handout. I'm going to turn the rest of the meeting over to, or the rest of the presentation over to Greg Anderson. I've been on the job for, this is my second week, and as you can probably imagine, when you start a new job, you certainly, even if you don't have the answers, you bring the people that do have the answers. So I appreciate you are reviewing our presentation, or I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. For the record, if you could introduce yourself, and I see this is a long presentation, and I hope you can just take the highlights of it.
Madam Chair, my name is Greg Anderson. I'm the Conservation Program Specialist for the USDA Farm Service Agency for the state of Minnesota, and it's a pleasure to be here. As Perry mentioned, there's a packet in your handout, and I'll just review the various slides that are in there and concentrate the comments on the Conservation Reserve Program, the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, and then the Continuous Conservation Reserve Program. The Conservation Reserve Program is the nation's single largest voluntary cooperative conservation program on private lands to date. It has over a 20-year legacy now. The sources of authority are or date back to the 1985 Farm Bill. And in short reference, CRP, Conservation Reserve Program's objective is to cost-effectively assist landowners and operators in conserving and improving the nation's natural resource base. CRP emphasizes the importance of natural resources in dealing with nation's soil, water, and wildlife resources, improves and preserves water quality, and enhances fish and wildlife habitat. CRP is administered by the USDA Farm Service Agency in cooperation with numerous other federal, state, local agencies. Our partners with USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service are the main technical partners with CRP. The current 2002 Farm Bill has authorized 39.2 million acres to be enrolled in CRP nationwide. To date, there's a little over 36 million acres in CRP nationwide. Specific to Minnesota, about 1.8 million acres, a little bit over 1.8 million acres are currently enrolled in CRP. And Minnesota has set a goal of enrolling 2 million acres into CRP by the end of this current Farm Bill, which ends December 31st of 07. Nationwide, Minnesota is seventh in the nation on the number of acres in CRP and third in the nation on the number of contracts. Just about 62,000 contracts are enrolled. You'll see there a breakdown of the various statistical data that applies to Minnesota specifically. Again, about 62,000 contracts, 1.83 million acres. Minnesota disperses about $110 million in annual payments each year. Nationwide, there are about 28 million acres of CRP expiring in the next 4 years. In Minnesota alone, in the next 4 years, 1.1 million acres of the 1.8 million acres of CRP is scheduled to expire. And the next slide there shows a graph of the expiring acres in the respective years and also the distribution of the expiring acres throughout Minnesota. You'll see a bulk of the acreages are in the Red River Valley area that are expiring. And to address this particular situation, back in 2004, President Bush visited Minnesota and made a statement that he wants to make certain that producers, CRP participants, have an opportunity to re-enroll expiring acreages. There was a process that was incorporated into CRP that we call re-enrollment and extension of CRP, in short reference, REX, R-E-X. The CRP contracts that we're dealing with are those that are expiring in 9/30/07, 9/30/08, 9/30/09, and 9/30/2010. All those particular individuals that have existing CRP contracts that are expiring in those years have been notified about their extension and have indicated their extension desires to FSA county offices. And to date, now we have basically wrapped up those particular contracts that are expiring 9/30/07 into our system, and we're going to finish the processing of the 08 through 2010 by March 1 of 07. There were various factors determining whether or not one would receive a re-enrollment or an extension of a contract that dates back to the early years when CRP contracts were originally rolled through a process called the Environmental Benefits Index Score. So that's how re-enrollments and extensions were determined. In Minnesota alone nationwide in 2007, of the 16 million acres expiring, about 13 million acres have been re-enrolled. That's about 84% of the nation's acres. Specific to the 08 and 2010, about 12 million acres nationwide are expiring. Those numbers aren't available yet since the processing hasn't been completed. Specific to Minnesota, the re-enrollment and extension of 2007, there were about 382,000 acres expiring in 9/30/07. Minnesota's captured 333,000, or 87%. So you can see the high demand for re-enrolling CRP. The next slide provides a graphic of the various breakdowns of those statistics. For the 2008-2010 years in Minnesota, 725,000 acres are going to be expiring. We don't have, the final totals, but we're estimating about 70 to 75% of those acres will be re-enrolled, which is equivalent to about 500 to 550,000 acres. CRP rental rates used for those particular RECs, re-enrollments and extensions, were provided in two different formats. For those that received a new re-enrollment contract, we used the current soil rental rate that's derived from using the three most predominant soils on a particular CRP acreage, using the most recent 3 years dry land cash rental data that we have. We've made some updates to the CRP soil rental rates in the year 2005. We'll be looking at updating again perhaps in 2007. And rental rates for contract extensions were just stayed at the original contract value that they presently have. Moving on to the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, which is a federal state program. In short reference, again, we call that CREP 2. It's the second of two Conservation Reserve Enhancement Programs that were approved for Minnesota. It was signed, that agreement was signed by Governor Plenty and the Secretary of Agriculture on Earth Day on Friday, April 22nd in Steele County. We're currently going through a process to amend the agreement to add some other opportunities for certain buffers where flooding is an issue. And the Conservation Reserve Program provides the authority for the state and the federal government to enter into Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program contracts and agreements. You'll see there a map that's provided by the Minnesota Board of Water Soil Resources. In short reference, Bowser is the state partner that the federal government is dealing with on the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. And the agreements basically for CREPs are that the state's contribution is a minimum of 20%, and then, of course, the other 80% comes from the Conservation Reserve Program. Funding levels for the Minnesota CREP 2, when the agreement was first approved back in 2005, were $200 million from the federal government and approximately $50 million from the state. And it encompassed 120,000 acres in the lower Mississippi River watershed, the Missouri-Des Moines watersheds, and the Red River Valley. And the breakdown of those acres are, you can see for yourself on that particular slide. CRP rental rates for CREP do provide an additive incentive of 30% with a maintenance rate of $4. And then there are other specific incentives. There's a signing incentive payment. Cost share, there's management, mid-contract management available in the reference of cost share. There's a practice incentive payment for installing the practice, and then for wetland restorations, a 25% restoration payment. The state portion, the funding for the state portion of the CREP is authorized through the Reinvest in Minnesota program, in short reference RIM. RIM provides two forms of payments to the CREP participants. The first is a one-time upfront bonus payment based on a certain percentage of the county assessor's estimated township market value for tillable farmland in the township of enrollment based on either the 45-year easement or the perpetual easement. And also RIM provides a cost share as well as in conjunction with the CRP cost share. And again, the next slide shows the latest statistical data that was provided by the Minnesota Board of Water Soil Resources. Their website there is on the bottom of that particular slide if you're inclined to look at that in further detail. But it's the annual report that is provided to our national office. And that particular report summarizes what's taken place in CREP from the onset of the start of the sign-up, which was back in June of 2005 through September of 2006.
I think we're going to need to have you wrap up the final comments here just to make sure everybody else has an opportunity to testify.
Sure. And then just to wrap up, the other option with CRP is the continuous CRP. The continuous CRP just provides other opportunities to landowners and operators to enroll on a continuous basis other environmentally sensitive lands on their farm. We've set a goal to reach another 100,000 acres of continuous sign-up by the end of 2007. We set that goal back in 2003, and to date we have about 45,000 acres in additional continuous sign-up acres enrolled. And there's a monthly or a summary of that particular program sign-up. And also we have a graph there that shows the projected workload for 2007. And again, our goal is to reach 2 million acres by the end of the year.
Super.
So with that, we thank you for the opportunity to make comments, and we'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
I think there are probably lots of questions, but we're just going to take one, and then hopefully you can meet individually with members. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Osnes and Mr. Anderson, this morning I looked in the paper at the commodity prices. The Chicago Board of Trade, corn at $4.08 a bushel. And I would assume that that's going to have an impact on these conservation programs, particularly land rental rates, and going to affect enrollment on CRP, CREP, and CCRP. And I noticed there was the sign-up bonuses, but those are all based on 05, and the world has changed that since 05. If corn is at $4 in January 2007, it could be at $5 in this time next year. Just how do those rental rates, can they affect what's going to happen to these programs? And then also, Mr. Hunt talked about merging or combining federal programs and state programs. Would it be possible if the state provided a sign-up bonus for, say, the Farmable Wetland Program or CRP, or even in the CREP contract, that if there were state dollars that provided a sign-up bonus, would that work? Would that be possible with FSA to have a marriage where we could have incentives provided to increase sign-up to compete with those land rental rates for corn?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, why don't I try to tackle the corn price issue, and maybe Mr. Anderson can tackle the rest. You know, that's a concern. I think a lot of people are looking at what are the effects of higher grain markets going to have on re-enrolling these lands. I think, as was pointed out, short-term, we're seeing the re-enrollment in the existing CRP program at 87%. That's a good sign that people are still re-enrolling despite that. The other thing that I would point out is that the bulk of our CRP land, the greatest volume of that, is up in northwest Minnesota. We've got a lot of counties that are 25% of their farmland acreage is in CRP. It's probably not the area of the state that we would see an increase in corn production. I think if we are going to have to increase corn acreage to meet the demand, I think it's probably going to come from soybean production. That's what USDA estimates are saying, and I tend to think that's true. There may be some that will be coming out, and frankly, there may be some land in CRP that probably can be, but most of it, by and large, is marginal, and I would expect in Minnesota, at least in the short term, that we won't see a huge shift into corn from those acres. Maybe you can address the rest.
Madam.
Very quickly, because I want to make sure everybody has a chance here.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, in reference to specific state incentives that would be available, we would encourage that with programs such as Conservation Reserve Program, the CREP Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, and continuous CRP. There is certainly nothing that would prohibit other incentives. The one thing that does get somewhat complicated is if the state would provide direct cost share. That becomes an issue, but direct incentives, X amount of dollars per acre if you enroll in this particular part of the state or this particular practice, would certainly be fine.
Thank you all for helping out. I would appreciate it.
Thank you.
Doug Peterson? Always pleased to see you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's good to be back in front of committee again, a committee that I served on for a number of years. I'll try to go through my comments.
If you could just put your name on the record.
I'll put my name on the record, yes, ma'am. Madam, Doug Peterson, President of Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll try to go through my comments, and I don't know if you're going to have time for questions or not, but we'll give it a go. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Peterson. I serve as the president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. The union is a general farm organization that was founded in 1929 that advocates policy on behalf of family farms and rural people. I also live on a family farm in Lac La Parle County near Madison, Minnesota. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to briefly talk about the 07 Farm Bill and some of the Farmers Union's priorities. I have provided the committee with a special copy of the special orders, I think, which is in your packet, and also there's one on carbon in there, too. They were passed out. The special orders were at our Farmers Union State Convention that form our policy on the Farm Bill. Minnesota is now in a very unique position in drafting the 07 Bill with Colin Peterson serving as chair of the House Ag Committee. One of the first things the Federal Farm Bill does is it serves as a safety net to our producers when prices fall to levels that threaten their viability due to markets, weather, and other factors that farmers cannot control. Minnesota Farmers Union does support program payments and loans to make sure that there is a safety net in place. The current Farm Bill that was enacted in 02 has come in nearly $17 billion below the 02 projection. In other words, the 02 Farm Bill, and because of prices, have saved the U.S. government $17 billion. That means when prices are good, such as for now, there are no payments from the Federal Treasury. That one important piece that also Minnesota Farmers Union supports is enacting and enforcing some reasonable payment limitations for farm programs. So that we are not supporting the Ted Turners and the Paris Hiltons of the world. I think that's important. Disaster assistance program is a looming piece that Farmers Union is urging Congress to enact in the 07 bill. In the last few years, we have seen more than half of our nation's counties being declared disaster areas at one time or another. In 05, the drought was 70% of the counties that were ag land, and in 06, there were 60% declared drought area. Right now, it's up to the Congress to pick one disaster over another in an ad hoc manner, and that becomes very political. A flood in northwestern Minnesota can be devastating to a family farm as a hurricane into the Gulf regions of this country also. For the purposes of this committee, I want to also talk briefly about the two titles that we are interested in as a farm organization, that being energy and conservation. Minnesota Farmers Union supports the idea of having an energy title in the next Farm Bill, and we have been a leader in ethanol and biodiesel, and we need programs in the next Farm Bill that will help us not only improve corn ethanol and biodiesel, but to bring Minnesota and the United States the next generation of cellulosic ethanol production. Minnesota supports the Farmers Union supports the idea of using grants, credits, and research to accomplish it. We can't just put up a switchgrass plant and turn the lights on. It just doesn't work that way. We need to have, I think, an industrial size technology and teach farmers how to grow switchgrass and how to harvest it and how to transport it. We support expanding the use of biomass in the gasification process in corn ethanol, such as is being done now currently in Benson and Little Falls. One thing our members have told us very loud and clear on our policy, if we have an energy title, we need to also emphasize the opportunity for farmers to invest in it and to own it, and that ownership be locally owned and keep the dollars in the state of Minnesota. Our farmers strongly support a conservation title in the Farm Bill. The farm bills have gotten progressively greener since 1985 when CRP, which is Conservation Reserve Program, that was the main program. Now in addition to CRP, which I have 15 acres on our farm, we have EQIP, CREP, WRP, Grassland Reserve, CSP, and other programs. And these are basic programs that is necessary today in today's environment, and they're truly excellent tools to help farmers make changes to control runoff and increase soil health and to also stop erosion. I believe this body has heard in the past how important it is that these programs are and how we can be leveraged by the state, for example, to help with the Clean Water Legacy. That is a program that works to help to clean up our state impaired waters, and the two things about these programs that our members tell us, they need to be adequately funded. I think you heard Bill Hunt talk about the need for people on the ground and also money on the ground. For example, the current federal administration has cut, and I want to repeat, cut the current conservation security program dramatically from its 2000 and baseline. And the amount of dollars that were cut out of that, ladies and gentlemen, committee, $934 million in the Budget Reduction Act in 2005. And in 2007 Budget Reconciliation Act, over the next 10 years, they're looking at cutting $7.7 billion out of that program also. So it doesn't help Mr. Hunt and his program and the conservation and environment to cut these programs if we're going to have a greener farm bill. Minnesota needs to deal with an impaired waters program, and they need the technical assistance. If farmers are going to transition from a row crop assistance, they need to put in a third crop or buffers or implement some of these programs. They certainly need help. We have talked to a lot of farmers that who have actually physically thrown away the applications that were given by the federal government because they're becoming too frustrated with too many requirements. And I'm not, it's not anecdotal when I am talking about the fact that some farmers have had 100-page applications that weigh 5 pounds. U.S. Bureaucracy at its best. I think, you know, as a government, we can do better. In your packet, finally in your packet, I want to make sure that you have the carbon piece in there and also the other piece on our special orders. But I will finally want to mention Minnesota Farmers Union is very supportive of the efforts to look at programs and policy around capturing and storing carbon. Minnesota Farmers Union, along with our National Farmers Union, we are aggregators of carbon. And we have begun a carbon sequestration trading program with our farmers, and I believe that fact sheet is there. And I will stand for questions. I ran through that pretty fast in respect to your time. And it's hard to go through the farm bill in 3 or 4 minutes, Madam Chair and committee.
It certainly is, but what you're doing is raising issues for us to talk about, and I think there is going to be a time we're going to want to spend more time on carbon itself, just as a separate issue, and energy as a separate issue, too, because there's so much to discuss there. But questions on other parts of this? Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your testimony, Mr. Peterson. Very good. I do have a question, though, on carbon, and I understand we may be talking about it some more, but could you give me an idea on what the payments per acre would be roughly on this program that you're putting out now? Is this kind of a new program we're trying to
Madam
understand?
Madam Chair and Representative Magnus, the carbon program is a cap-and-trade policy program, much like the H2SO4 acid rain program. What happens when industries can't meet standards, they have the choice of increasing their filtration or their stack cleaning process or buying carbon. The carbon trading program is basically modeled after that cap and trade program. What it's worth, because there are different types of sequestrations, you sequester carbon either through photosynthesis or you sequester it in the ground, keep it in the ground. Wind turbines will sequester carbon. They do qualify. Wetlands and wetland restoration will qualify. Minimum tillage with less than 6% disturbance in a 30-inch row will. Forestry and reforestation does qualify. Methane digesters qualify. CRP, CREP, RIM, and grazing lands qualify. The good thing about this is that there's, number one, no taxes involved and no government program. That is the sequestration. The amount of dollars that come to depend very much on the type of practice that you're sequestering. For example, if you're doing a rotational grazing program, they may be anywhere from $3.75 to $4 per acre based on the amount of tons that they will sequester. A grazing program will sequester almost 2 tons of carbon per acre. And that's a 5-year contract, so that farmer has to sign up on a 475 U Farm Service Agency form. So this is not like if, let's say, that the Representative Osmond had a pasture land that had been in pasture for 30 years. He cannot put that into a carbon sequestration program. He has to actually have something done, but it doesn't mean it's going to be like a swap buster or sod buster provision in there. It has to be a 475 form.
I think we're going to
just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. And There's quite a few folks out there now in agriculture country, and a lot of this is going corn on corn, but some are using the strip tillage where they just go down and they, in the fall, they just disturb a small strip of soil there, and when they're doing that, they also are applying fertilizer in a deep banding situation. But do you envision that qualifying under this program? And if not, how can we modify things
Madam Chair and Representative Magnus, the strip tillage program depends upon soil disturbance. Once you break the soil, you allow the carbon to go up. Yeah. You have the ability to use press wheels or packers behind some of those tillage implements that will press or close the soil so that those carbon won't go into the atmosphere. It is a complete, this is not a government program, so the carbon CCX, which is the Chicago Carbon Climate Exchange, determines the value of those carbon tons. In order to sequester carbon, we have to have 125 tons to sell in a contract. Now, that is just like selling corn and soybeans on the commodity market. It's based on the value. Corn is, carbon in Europe, because the Kyoto Agreement wasn't signed. We're dealing at $3.75 to $4 an acre. In Europe, it is $30. In Canada, it's a little bit less than that, probably $20 an acre. The practices are done on soil science and all run through the carbon exchange in Chicago.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We need to have more discussions about that. And there are scientists at the University of Minnesota right now who are measuring sequestration and various crop practices. I think that's something that we need to be aware of. Thank you for testifying.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and committee, and to committee. Good luck in the session, and have fun.
And we'll see you again, I am sure, and I certainly am hopeful of that. Adam Wartheisen and Bill Gorman, and I suspect one of you is coming from out of town. Is that correct?
Yes.
I want to make sure you get a chance to testify.
Madam Chair, my name is Adam Wartheisen. I work with the Land Stewardship Project. We're a membership-based organization here in Minnesota. We have a number of different programs that support new farmers getting started on the land, community-based food systems, and then we work in the policy arena around state, federal, and local policy. I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and look forward to talking about the upcoming 2007 Farm Bill.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Bill Gorman. I'm a grass-based grazer farmer from Goodhue, Minnesota, and my critter of choice is a dairy cow. I also serve on LSP's Federal Farm Policy Committee, where we work and promote our views on federal farm policy. Adam's going to give you just a touch more on what LSP is.
Thanks, Bill, Madam Chair. I'm going to try to be fairly brief in my testimony. Bill probably wouldn't tell folks, but you know, he woke up at 3 o'clock this morning to milk his cows to drive up here to testify and talk about some of the things that he thinks are important in the Farm Bill and what would work on his farm. So I want to give him a good opportunity to talk about that. The Land Stewardship Project, we're coming into our 25th year, and from the get-go, our organization has been really supportive of policies that protect soil and water and mean better stewardship of the land. And we've been very interested in conservation programs and ideas that have a multiple benefits approach, where we get productive agricultural lands that we can, you know, do economic activity on, but also gain the environmental benefits of conservation on working farmland. You know, we continue to support programs like the Conservation Reserve Program, which has been mentioned here. On marginal lands, it's oftentimes the best use. But for us, it's really has come a lot of our work around looking at what are ways that we can have active conservation on working lands. So one of the programs that I want to focus on is the conservation security program, and I think there was a yellow sheet that was passed out. I should say this was a sheet that was geared towards farmers who are looking to get into the program, and state conservationist Bill Hunt talked a little bit about this program. We believe at the Land Stewardship Project that this program should be the flagship of the conservation title in the next Farm Bill. And in part, it was enacted in 2002. One of the things that we did prior to that Farm Bill was we went out to Washington, D.C. with a group of farmers, about 16 of them, that met with members of Congress with a package called a Tilt Against Stewardship. And part of those components of the Tilt Against Stewardship were put into what we believe the Conservation Security Program, which was championed by Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa, who, again, today is the chair of the Senate Ag Committee. And so we feel there's a great opportunity to strengthen and build CSP in this next Farm Bill. As CSP was passed, it was really the first outcomes-based conservation program where producers are actually rewarded because of the quantifiable measures of conservation that they were carrying out on their farm, such as how they're protecting the soil quality and water quality. We can measure those, and NRCS does that. And so we see this stewardship program really securing conservation on lands that might otherwise go into less sustainable farming practices. It also allows farmers, once they get into the program, to expand their contracts. So not only are they reaching a bar to get into the program, but once they're in the program, they can do additional conservation above and beyond that. USDA's own motto behind CSP was reward the best and motivate the rest. We think that still holds true, and CSP, as it's being rolled out on a watershed basis, has an advantage that it's eligible to all producers. You can grow anything, and you can even grow corn, but you have to grow corn in a way that makes sense and that's protecting soil quality and water quality. One of the farmers said, well, CSP has allowed me to not only farm with my heart, but to farm with my pocketbook as well, because it's public's investment in maintaining and securing conservation on working land. Federal programs are often viewed by farmers as a signal, and we think CSP is the right signal that the public is invested in the way a farmer is caring for their land and the way that they're growing the crops and livestock, that if they're protecting soil quality and they're protecting water quality, that they care for wildlife habitat is preserved, that they don't want to see that soil in their stream beds, that we as a public can reward farmers for doing that. Unfortunately, CSP has faced some struggles in implementation in the last 3 years. And Bill Hunt mentioned some of those struggles. I'll be the first to say Bill Hunt and the NRCS and their staff have been really, they've done a tremendous job with the limited amount of resources that they have. And I would commend them on their work in bringing this program to Minnesota farmers, which is about 707 watersheds. We believe that CSP needs to be made available to many, many more farmers. And so we're working with our allies at the federal level and at the state level to leverage not only additional funding for the program, but programmatic changes that make it simpler, that make it work easier, and that really continue to reward proven conservation practices. I just want to kind of paint one picture of how this program, I've seen it work on a member's farm in the Root River watershed, which was up in 2005. Brad and Leslie Hodgson are members, and they went through our Farm Beginnings course, and they have a farm that dumps, that at the end of about an 800-yard draw goes into the Root River. It's like a bluff that goes right down to the Root River. And their farm of 100 acres was in row crop production for many years. And when they bought the farm, they decided they wanted to do some rotational grazing. And so they decided to put it into grazing. And they were able in 2005 to get a CSP contract and then to extend grazing on their entire farm. So now the what you see on the farm is this lush pasture down to their stream, the Root River. And now you see them voting on a flushing barn in front of their mowing equipment to flush out wildlife, which now is increased on their lands. This is an example, and when you say, you know, was that $5,000 that you got in CSP help? And they say, you're damn right it helped us. You know, it helps us to secure conservation here and to do more. One of the things I would say just before I turn it over to Bill is we think that there are opportunities here in the state to help leverage those federal dollars, and when CSP becomes available in watersheds, that we can maximize our participation in it. And so perhaps through Clean Water Legacy, there's opportunities to get farmers up to that eligibility requirements to get into the program. One of the things that we are seeing when we talk with farmers is maybe they didn't know that they had to have certain things to get into this program, or they weren't up to that level to get into it. And so if we could help get farmers up to that level or help educate them about what that level needs to be so when their watershed does come up, that they can access CSP and then get into the program and then maximize more conservation, we think that's a really important way to secure more conservation, and it's an effective way to help clean up Minnesota's you know, rivers and waterways. With that, I'll quickly turn it over to Bill. He can talk a little bit about his farm. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, before 1990, we were a pretty...
Can you just mention your name for the record?
Bill Gorman, Goodyear, Minnesota.
Thank you.
We were pretty much a conventional dairy that you would see up and down the road. We grew corn and row crops, although having dairy, we also had a certain amount of hay and pasture. In 1990, I got real, I don't know if you want to, had a change of heart or change of mind or whatever, and we quit growing corn, and I turned the whole farm into a grazing and grass-based dairy. And we found out that you really, contrary to some thought, you don't need to corn to have a successful dairy. What we did was based on I guess my dislike for fertilizers, chemicals, and erosion you could see happening on the farm. And by turning it into the grass-based situation we have, it changed a lot of the way we did things, and it improved the life and everything on the farm. Part of the problem with the old farm program is that people in a situation like I, who made the adjustment to a grass-based system, you no longer qualify under the old farm program, which is a program designed to maximize bushels of production with little regard for conservation or anything else, because the goal is to produce bushels. Well, if you don't produce bushels, you don't participate in the program. And as crazy as it seems today with corn price where it is, the problem with the program is that number one, it pushes you to produce the bushels, and then you're also eligible for countercyclical payments, which when you get into that situation, as you've seen for the last number of years, outside of just where it is right now, you end up collecting from the government a whole set of subsidies, and you're actually producing the product at or below the cost of production, which doesn't benefit anybody except a few ultimate end users, and these end users are basically in a lot of confined animal large units, and they can put up a huge building on a very limited amount of acres, and a big part of their production is based on buying commodities, corn in particular, I guess, in this area, at or below the cost of production. And we've seen in our area and across the state and in a lot of other states where it ruins the rural landscape. Churches and schools and people just leave. There's just less people around. So we got to move into a new farm program that with its concentration on conservation. And CSP is the That's the plan that has to work, because when you're dealing with a program that works on working farmland, and I have no problem with CRP. There is definitely a place for CRP and EQIP and all these other programs, but to get our hands around the gorilla of erosion and the like, we've got to get a program that works with the working farmland, buffer strips, crop rotation, water runs, contour systems, all this kind of stuff has got to come back to work on that working farmland. That, I guess, is my biggest point. And being time what it is, I'll just quit there. I'll take questions or stuff, or I'll be around a little while afterwards or whatever. But thank you for the opportunity.
We're glad you're here, particularly thinking about 3 o'clock in this morning. I was up early, but not nearly that early. Yes, Representative Magnus has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for you, Madam Chair. Are we going to have additional testimony on the federal farm bill?
Since it's late, what we're going to do is we're going to ask Brad Redoutland to come back. He is handing this out. We'll make sure everybody gets that in their. I think it was in the packet, actually. Oh, it wasn't. We'll make sure everybody gets this before they leave. Or we'll send it to their office, one or the other. But I think that we are going to need to have some discussions about what we might like to do as a committee. So if you are interested in something?
Madam Chair, I just a couple of points. I have a question for our testifiers here. I know we have a lot of new committee members, a lot of new members in the legislature. I just have a couple of questions about the organization Land Stewardship Project. Roughly how many members do you have?
The Land Stewardship Project, Madam Chair, we're made up of around 2,500 family memberships throughout Minnesota, predominantly in Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota.
Just to follow up, the 2,500, then that includes other members from other states. How many of those other 2,500 are from other states? They're not Minnesota residents, for example.
Madam Chair, I think I don't have the exact number or breakdown, but I believe about probably 80% of our membership resides in Minnesota, or maybe even more than that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we've had some excellent testimony today on the federal farm bill, but Madam Chair, I don't see Farmers Union did a great job, and they always do, but I don't see Farm Bureau here testifying. I don't see the soybean growers. I don't see the corn growers, the wheat growers, the largest agricultural groups on the agronomy side. I don't see any of the livestock groups testifying. Madam Chair, if we're going to have a reasonable discussion about the federal farm bill, I would wonder why the soybean growers with 7.5 million acres, the corn growers with 7 million acres, of wheat growers in the livestock groups are not at the table here talking to us about what their thoughts are on the farm bill, since they're the major producers here. They're the ones affected by it.
Well, Representative Magnus, our different committees have different focuses, and I hope you sit on the Agriculture Committee, and I'm sure they're going to have all these groups come before them. The folks we specifically invited, but I did have this our agenda out in ample time for other folks to ask if they wanted to testify, and I did not get any requests from anybody else to testify. I think we all understand that there is the farm side of the conservation bill, and the conservation side, and we were looking at the conservation side today.
Well, I think, Madam Chair, just a point to
Representative Magnus.
Madam Chair, the soybean growers, the corn growers, the other folks here, I think, certainly are looking at the conservation side also. I know this for a fact, Madam Chair. I was chairman of the soybean organization for many years, and I was chairman of the national organization, and I belong to the cattlemen's, and I belong to the corn growers. I know for a fact, Madam Chair, they are working hard on conservation practices, and I think to not have them here talking to us about the farm bill is not a good way to do business when we're talking about this again with a lot of new members and focusing on this kind of things. I think they should be asked to be brought in and testify.
We just want to let you know again that this agenda has been out. No other group requested to testify. I'll certainly then talk to Representative Junkie, see if he wants to join hearing so the Agriculture Committee gets to hear then something more about the need to have wetlands to have our ducks. So each of our committees has a perspective, and perhaps it would be a good idea if we sat down together and had a joint hearing. I'd be glad to do that. For the folks who came, were there any other questions of them? I truly appreciate your testimony and coming up at the time of morning. Representative Mo.
Just a quick question. It might be helpful if the Land Stewardship Project provides Representative Magnus with a list of members in his district. I'm sure he'd appreciate that.
we are glad you're here, and I think it's interesting to hear from both sides, and we're certainly going to get that over the course of this legislature. It always happens. I've been around long enough to know that happens. I see no further questions from members. They might want to chat with you afterwards, and I hope you will let them do that. Thanks again for coming. And with Representative Hansen.
I move the minutes from the last meeting.
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen, for remembering. Does anybody have any questions about the minutes? With no objection, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Any opposition? Minutes are approved. Thank you, and with that, the meeting is adjourned.